The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 965. It's the 12th of January, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Steve Hughes, VP of Exploration at Asia Met Resources, ARS, sticker there. And Steve talks about the award of their Butong production license and progress at their other assets in Indonesia, that's BKM and BKZ. Plus, I also have Colin Bird, Director and Non-Executive Chairman of Ferrum Crescent, that's FCR, and Colin explains why he's joined the company and what progress he expects going forward. Plus, Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the following stocks: Card Factory, Craneway, Burford Capital, and Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, talks about GKN, Mitchells & Butler, and B&M European Value Retail, that's BME there, and Mitchells & Butler is MAB. I also have Lessons Learned from Investors and Traders. And if you know one of these, if you have learned a lesson anyway, then please submit it here at the blog, voxmarketstock.co.uk. Also have, as always, top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, Steve Hughes, VP of Exploration Asia Met Resources, ARS ticker. Steve, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Good to be here.
And when you say VP of Exploration, you're the man on the ground, the man in the jungle, because I've seen pictures there, and some amazing, you know, a backdrop of pictures you've sent. It looks like you genuinely love what you do there, don't you?
I am the man on the ground, and I do enjoy the jungle. It's a place where you find gold, and gold, copper, and all my zinc. Yeah. So I enjoy being there.
If someone's listening right now, let's say they're tuning in for the first time, they've never heard of Asia Met Resources. It's been a heck of a, you know, one of the best plays on the junior resource sector in the last couple of years. It's got been 10 bagged pretty much. But if they haven't heard of Asia Met, summarize it, Steve. What is Asia Met all about?
Well, Asia Met's about the asset. We're into copper, gold, or well, copper and base metals. Zinc is one of our most recent minerals that we've identified in the project area. And, you know, if you look at copper or zinc assets around the world, they're in shortage of really good assets, which we have. And so that's a key criteria. And then you've got experience. You got Tony Manini, Peter Bird, myself. We've been on in Indonesia for, you know, combined 25 years. So we understand the game. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's a team in the field. We got an excellent group of guys that have been out there for 30 years. They've been working steady on. So, yeah, we've got the team, the experience, and the assets.
Yeah, and talking about the assets, so basically two assets there. You've got they're currently working on at the moment is the feasibility study of BKM, and then you've just had, we talked about Butong, which is a lot larger asset, about four or five times as big as well. That's I suppose further down the line there, but so let's start off with Butong. Though the production license has been a while coming, but it's finally arrived. What's your thoughts, and what's next for Butong, Steve?
Yeah, we got the Butong license. I was a little bit off on the timing, but I'm sure a few people got some nasty things to say to me about that, but at the end of the day, we've got it. And so, look, I'm just actually meeting the drilling company today, having some discussions with them about how to proceed forward. We've got Butong East Porphyry, very well defined with measured and indicated resources. Butong West Porphyry with more inferred that needs to be drilled out and converted to measured indicated. We've also got the Butong Skarn, which is it's an oxide skarn deposit with a lot of malachite azurite. So the first plan is really just to accommodate the, you know, the Indonesia's efforts to do in-country processing. So we're going to be drilling some holes and doing some metallurgical test work on those holes to see the leachability of the material. So we'll be doing Butong East Porphyry first, obviously, because that's the very high-grade starter area. And then the Bouton Skarn, which is, you know, malachite azurite, very leachable copper mineral. So we'll be doing that afterwards.
Yeah, but Bouton's, it's quite big, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very big project area. It's look, it's a 10,000 hectare block with we call them two separate porphyries, but in fact, we'll probably end up linking the two together once we do the infill drilling. It could very well turn out to be, you know, a very massive project, which is what we think. And the Bouton Skarn, you know, conveniently falls just a little bit to the north of the Bouton East porphyry, so any open pit we did there would include the Skarn. So it's a bonus. And you know, there's actually some zinc projects in the area. I think I put that in the release. There was a couple of Freeport holes that were drilled in the old days, and they hit some very nice intersections of zinc, so we'll be following up on that as well.
Yeah, and the way it's stacked up is quite nice. Like I said, you've got BKM, which is a smaller project, but very compelling by the looks of it, by looks of the drill results. And so that'll sort of obviously go into production, get some cash flow there, and then we'll help you sort of ramp up towards Bouton, maybe, I don't know, get a farm in, or what, I don't know what's going to happen there, but it's good the way it's stacking up here. So let's go to the results yesterday from BKZ, because you're drilling there, delineation drilling. What's the plan there, and take us through some of the results then, what you like about it.
Yeah, so look, we got another hole back on line 33550 with almost 40 meters of 1.3% copper and reasonably shallow depths. Inside there, we had a broad zone of almost 2%. That was about 21 meters. And then we had two zones that were roughly 7 and 4 meters in width, and each of them almost 3% copper. So very good copper numbers that are underneath the overlying base metal zone, which is zinc, lead, silver, a little bit of copper, some gold. So the idea is, you know, we've done quite a bit of scout drilling there now. It's obvious time to stop doing the scout drilling and advance it to delineation drilling. So we've got a rig set up on 33550 again, and another rig set up on 33800, which is way up in the north. And basically what we'll do is just start progressing each rig towards each other to get the infill done. And yeah, I hope to have a maiden resource for that by mid-year or maybe earlier if possible.
Yeah, and so in layman's talk, if someone's listening to this now and they're not au fait with grades, I mean, how would you put it to them as a person who's looking at the thing? What would you say the results from this are good? What are they like?
Yeah, no, they're very good. I mean, if you look at the zinc, we've got zones of 30 meters that run in over 10% combined lead zinc with an ounce of silver, half a gram of gold. And then underneath you have this broad copper zone that we've, you know, just recently discovered. And, you know, we're getting grades up to, I think it's 11% over 1 meter intervals. That is very interesting. It was unexpected. We didn't know it was there because we, you know, this was a base metal zone, but we just happened to drill underneath it. And, you know, it's like a feeder structure. It's very high grade. It's very silicified. It's very much like the feeder structure that's in the central part of BKM. So, you know, we've been trying to connect these two things up. And, you know, the infill program, that's going to kind of take away from that tying the two up. But once we get the infill done, we'll go right back to trying connecting the whole system up. And probably even look to the north of BKZ and see what's up there.
Yeah, so how does it fit, though? How does BKZ sort of fit with BKM, as in, you know, going forward plan-wise, as in heading towards maybe, you know, developing and producing from there? How does that work? Is it, are you going to be doing sort of, you know, a similar sort of time zone, or is it two different projects, or what?
Yeah, it's probably two different projects. I mean, well, it definitely is. A BKZ is a standalone.
Yeah.
It'll be a flotation-type circuit where we produce a concentrate with zinc lead and you know, there is an existing lead zinc smelter in Kalimantan that I've identified. I'm trying to get in touch with the owner, and that's one thing that we've been looking at. We'll continue to seek out groups that would take the concentrate, but you know, in the meantime, you know, the primary goal is to get a resource on it, have a look at the economics of that as a standalone project. But you got to remember, BKM is going to be a heap leach. system. It'll have well-developed infrastructure in the area. So by the time BKZ comes on stream, which would be roughly, you know, let's say 6 to 8 years after BKM, it's going to be able to piggyback off all of that existing infrastructure. So it'll it'll make things a lot cheaper, right? It's a great find. It's only 800 meters north of BKM. It's fantastic. We did a good thing there.
Yeah, and I suppose you have to realize that it is all about cost, isn't it? Because, I mean, like I say, you can go around the world and find companies with mineralization and good assets, but, you know, you've got to look at companies that can produce at a lower cost quartile because, you know, if the price comes under pressure, then it's these companies, the first companies who can't produce at low levels, will suffer first. And this project is relatively low cost compared to others, isn't it?
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, no, that's correct. And, you know, it's the grade's a big issue, too. You know, I mean, if you look at across the world right now and you do a search on copper and zinc projects, you'll be hard pressed to find projects that are hauling out assays like we did out of BKM.
Yeah,
I mean, that previous release on the metallurgy hole, that was over 100 meters at 1%. I mean, there's not many people doing this around the world. So, you know, we're in a unique situation where we have BKM with high grades. We've got BKZ with very high grade zinc and lead. And then we've got Bootong with a, you know, from surface we can drill 300 meters at over a percent. So, yeah, we're in a unique situation, a good situation, and we're just happy to push these projects forward.
It seems like everywhere you're surrounded, you're swimming in mineralization there. Everywhere you step, it's almost like, you know, it has potential, isn't it?
Yeah, no, there's still BKW. We really need to go and do some, you know, exploratory work around the rest of the block. I mean, BK South, there's that's also in the books to do more work. And then there's, you know, Baroy, which I absolutely love. I believe there's a lot sitting over at Baroy. You know, we do need to get a forestry permit to work there, and we'll work on that this year. And, you know, if we get that, we will immediately go in there and start drilling, because that's a very attractive project. And obviously Bootong, we've got two porphyries and a skarn and some other things around there that probably haven't even discovered yet. So there's, we're kind of swimming in the copper and zinc right now.
Yeah. Well, we know about copper. Copper is, you know, or particularly I do. I mean, I know copper is, you know, really it's a measure of growth, and it's the backbone to growth in the world, and even, you know, traditional and new economy. So you got the, you know, electric vehicles. We know they take a lot more copper than normal cars. So zinc, what is the demand like for zinc? What's the profile there, and what is it? You know, majority. What is it used for?
Well, I mean, you got galvanized products, you know, zinc's in those. And if you look at the overall world production, it's gone down. Some of the bigger mines have shut down. And you can tell that because the zinc price is at an all-time high. Mm. You know, so being in zinc, you know, in the old days was kind of people looked down on it. The price was about 80 cents, 70, 80 cents. But, you know, zinc's $1.50 now almost, and a pound. And that's... you can't walk away from that. And if you look at what we're intersecting, the grades combined with the lead and the silver, I mean, it's over $400 a ton dirt. So that's nothing to shake your head at.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to the priority project here, what you concentrate on, the feasibility study on BKM. How's that going? What's going on there?
Yeah, look, we're just another reason I'm meeting with the driller today to talk about the geotech program. It's so the drillers are sitting on two geotechnical holes that are combined with hydrogeology studies. That will be finished within 30 days, and basically that's probably the end of the field work for the feasibility component. Be some environmental work around, but overall the main field work will be done. And then it's just a matter of getting the study components, all of those components of the field work into the study and putting it all together into a package. And as I said to everyone, I'm really hoping the Indonesian feasibility study, which is very important for us because once that's approved, we can go to the next step. So I'm hoping that comes out in Q2. right now I don't see anything that would delay it beyond that. So I'm yeah, that's our target. So it's
yeah, excellent stuff. Marvelous stuff, Steve Willison. It looks like you're doing very well out there and progressing the project, and it all looks good. So, but if someone's listening right now and they're not yet following the story, but they're thinking about it now, you've been talking about this, give them three reasons, just a reminder, three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
Well, just go to the web and look up copper zinc projects around the world, and then do a comparison about what they're drilling versus what we've been drilling. I think you'll see that we're on the top margin of high grade project, holding high grade projects. Experience, obviously, in the team. I mean, we've got a fantastic group of people with such lengthy time in Indonesia. Myself, over 23 years. Tony and Peter. I mean, all of us have been around, and we really know what we're doing when it comes to developing assets. And yeah, so it's yeah, those are, for me, those are the two most important things. And basically, you know, the experience in putting things into production. Yeah. If you look at Tony's experience, he's been with Prominent Hill, he's been in Sepon, Golden Grove. I mean, he's in Marta Bay up in Sumatra in Indonesia. So I mean, the experience. Outside of geologic experience, but the experience to put projects through to the production. So three components, we have them all, and I think if people look into it, they'll be very happy if they what they see with Asia Met.
Marvellous, Steve. Good to chat to you as always. I'll let you get back to the jungle now and do your stuff. And
okay, excellent.
Hopefully speak again soon, fella. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Director and Non-Executive Chairman of Ferrum Crescent. That's FCR ticker. Colin, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, we spoke recently in a different guise, of course, but it's I'm sure lots of shareholders will welcome your position there, new position at FCR. So first and foremost, tell us what brings you to FCR, and if you could, summarise what FCR is about in that as well, Colin.
Well, it wasn't a difficult decision when invited to join the board of FCR. I see a company with a great project, and I see that I'll be joining a couple of colleagues there on the board who are driven to get the best out of that project. The project I'm talking about is the Toro project in northwest Spain. It's a lead zinc project. There's talk of silver as well, but I don't think that's been defined fully yet. But essentially, to nutshell it, is an advanced project with immense upside, in my opinion, a team who can recognize and develop that upside, and a team who can actually operate in the region. And in my belief, there's a European renaissance for base metal projects, Spain and Portugal being drivers. And so well-positioned, right place, right time, with a major project and a good team.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that major project, dig into that, the key project there. Can you give us a bit more detail on that, if you could, please?
Yeah, Toro has been around in a number of years, as most good projects, and it fits the model that I pursued throughout my sort of public company life, is there's a huge database, which I, lead zinc, northwest Spain, as I say, with some silver, a huge database, and as with all huge databases, everybody thinks they've been properly interrogated, the raw data has been properly interrogated, the right decisions have been made. And what I've found, particularly over the last few years, is that with the benefit of modern technology and making sure, it's easy, it was hard in the old days to number crunch and to reiterate various souls and the influence and drawing their polygons. But with today's tools, you know, we can actually model the ore bodies quickly. We can input assumptions which can change the shape of the ore body, and all these tools are available. Miles Campion, let me tell you, is in the business of really getting down to detail and analyzing every bit of raw data what came out of that project. And so back to Miles, just, you know, I mentioned Miles is a geologist who's been fund manager and has been right across the spectrum, so he links his own undoubted technical capability with the ability to commercialize it. So Miles is really getting stuck into that project, and whilst I haven't got stuck into it myself yet, I'm impressed with the feedback I'm getting and the what Miles is actually formulating as a plan for taking the project forward.
Yeah.
Of course, he's supported. The chief executive, Lawrence, and Miles, have developed a plan which I think will add a lot of value in not too long a time. So that's the Toral project. Huge database.
Mm-hmm.
I think not fully interrogated. The raw data not fully modelled and being fully modelled. And the results of all this will be a JORC code, which is imminent, and the market knows about it. But that's one thing. That's a point in time. But what is important is it will direct us towards the opportunities, the extension of the ore body. I understand it's open-ended and to the north and to the east, and possibly to the south. So I see lots of potential, and I think the work that Miles is doing will unlock a lot of that potential, and hopefully we'll be able to tell the market all about it in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, and so where do you sort of position yourself here? I mean, because you're talking market cap-wise, you know, it's a micro-cap, but where do you see Farum Crescent, or where do you see the position in the junior market here?
Well, first of all, what a joy to get in, to be buying a ticket when it is a micro cap, as you say. What a nice time to be buying the ticket. The cost of generating that database and today's market cap and what you get for your market cap is quietly, none of it joins up. So the ticket is cheap for entry for myself and for the team. They've been well spotted in spotting the opportunity. Where's it going? It, more or less, as I say, that the modelling is desktop type stuff, not cheap, but certainly not expensive. And we'll direct our future activities to take this ore body into where we want it to be. We are internally convinced that it's a much bigger animal than one sees. And of course, as I say, the current modelling will take us there. And of course, value is totally related to size, grade, and contained metal. So in reality, more contained metal, more market value, more stability, more certainty, better share price, better market cap, more certainty, more definition, trade interest. The things are all of these things are linked up together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Where do I see our industry? I think, I'm excited about 2018 and up until the next 2-3 years. Everybody, in about 2006 there was before the world fell apart in 2007, 2008, round about there. There was money went back into mining, but nowhere near enough. Nowhere near enough went back into mining. And our sector, as usual, got neglected and has limped along with the odd burst for a number of years now, since 2007, 2008. As I say, there's been the odd burst, but not the consistency of investment that is needed. So I see that, a disconnect between the availability and the supply of metals compared to the demand. And so that has to be addressed. And mankind will address it. And there are those countries we know about who are busy addressing it. And so for the next, I see our sector in particular, irrespective of major markets showing, I think, in 2018 some extreme, but I think that the volatility will be much bigger than some commentators are saying. But our industry has got a way of ignoring the bigger markets. And so I see this year, next year, that the junior sectors, as we call it, the emerging mining companies, will in actual fact be good investments. Folks, I think we will attract a lot more money than we've ever attracted. And I think, and I'm already seeing it, that the institutions will be back. And of course, a combination of good retail support and institutions who are prepared to take a longer term view and put your share note in the top right hand drawer with an 18-month, 2-year perspective. That's a nice combination of investment, which leads to solidarity, should knock the short term volatility out, because whilst the retail are very supportive, they've also got high expectations. And a long-term hold isn't much longer than 3 weeks. So to be able to satisfy all ends and all spectrums, all parts of the market, I see a 2018 moving in that direction. The institutions won't be quick to come back, but we're seeing signs, and I suspect by 2019, companies like Farum Crescent will be enjoying good institutional support as well as the retail sector. Mm-hmm. And the retail sector tends to drive the price, and the institutional sector tend to maintain the price. Good combination. And I think ferrochrome is the type of company which will attract that support, i.e. big asset, solid asset, the type of asset that, that the mining trade, the bigger end, needs. And so I think we'd be well positioned on the investment radar screens of quite a few institutions.
Yeah, and you think there's going to be some, a good time 2018 for junior miners. But and specifically, what kind of metals do you like then, Colin?
Well, I'm a base metal fan. I tend not to chase ambulances, obviously one can't deny lithium, and to sit here and try and make a case against it would be stupid. But I'm not a bandwagon I jumped on. I tend to be very, very basic, and to me, copper, zinc, lead, tin, nickel. If gold is associated with copper, I like those sort of deposits too, but in one particular company I'm associated with, that's gold driven, so obviously I like my gold too. But base metals to me are due for a big run, and copper and zinc are two of my favorites.
Yeah, okay, marvelous stuff.
And then, of course, just to add to that, why am I drawn to ferrum crescent? Look where that zinc lead is contained. It's contained in a country which has been around forever in mining. The legislation is open and transparent. You know what you've got to do in terms of licenses. You know what your rights are, and you know what your obligations are. A lot of companies are actually going into areas now where they're in the unknown politically, and the mining code is a moving feast. So what a joy to be in Spain, where the prospects are good and the legislation and mining law are well understood and well conducted.
Yeah, okay. Colin, if anyone's listening right now and don't have ferrum crescent on their watch list, they like the sound of this, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on FCR's page and add them to their watch list, please.
Well, as I say, a large deposit, which has got a good opportunity to be much larger and attractive to the trade. A tremendous raw database, which has yet to be fully interrogated. And my last point goes back to the previous point, is that in a jurisdiction and a territory where mining is well understood and the law is transparent and you know your obligations and you know your rights. So here's a company which can add value to anybody's portfolio, shorter than longer. And that's what this management team is about, and that's the mission we're on.
Excellent stuff, Colin. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
That's my pleasure. Thank you very much. Thanks for the time, and thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell, Russ Mould, along with his cold.
I am currently doing my firmest impression of a buffalo breathing through an aqualung. It's not great, but I'm getting there. The impression's good, but the cold's not much fun.
Well, at least you're soldiering on, so you're a proper man.
Yeah, it's not flu, and it's not man flu. It's just a very, very blocked head, which some people may think is not too different from normal anyway.
I think you're underestimating that. I think most people will be struck down for days, bedridden, is what you got.
Well, some of the commuters on my train this week have definitely been suffering, and whoever it was who gave me their cold, they're in a whole world of trouble when I catch up with them.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? And I'm just thinking, I don't really mix with a lot of people in close environment because I've got my own little office, and the biggest chance of being passed on germs is for my kids. So I'm going to tell them now. I'm not going to bother them now until this flu jab's over with. So I'll say, don't talk to me.
I'll just have to hermetically seal your office.
Exactly. Marvellous stuff. All right, so what's happening, Russ, in the world of stocks and shares? What are you looking at?
So we're going to look at three stocks, all of which we've looked at before: Card Factory, Craneware, Burford Capital.
Okay, Card Factory. Let's go with that. Have they had a good Christmas or not? Are people still selling cards?
Shocker. And I think that's why we need to talk about it. I mean, we first looked at it almost exactly a year ago. Actually, the first podcast that we did together back in February last year, shares were at 250p. They went all the way to 355, paid a special dividend. Everything panning out as we expected. And since then, it's all got a little bit trickier. And they actually dished out a second profit warning in 4 months yesterday. And you've identified one of the three. There are three problems. One, people aren't buying as many cards as they thought. Two, like-for-like growth was actually pretty good at 2.7% for the year, but the bulk of the upgrade, the growth came from non-cards like dressings and gift wrap, where their margins are lower. And thirdly, they're still suffering from the weaker pound, and they've got cost pressure from things like the living wage and the national minimum wage that's going to cost them about 8 million quid. Mm-hmm. Now, the downgrade itself wasn't that big. Boss Karen Hubbard talked about EBITDA of 93 to 96 million for this year. That's down from 96.5 was the consensus, and a flattish year next year. And so that you're not looking at big downgrades, but the stock got cut down by about a fifth. So it's now at about 220-odd p. So all of the gains that we had over the last year have gone, though we've still got the dividends in the bank. So the question is, what do you do with it now? And I think, first of all, you've still got a 4% dividend yield that is extremely well covered by earnings, even more covered by cash, and the company's got relatively little debt, although it does have some leases of which we need to be aware. Mm-hmm. So that in itself, if you're an income hunter, you're probably just going to think, okay, I'm going to take my lumps here because there's still a regular dividend. They still might pay the odd special. They still, you know, 9.1p regular, one or two brokers are forecasting a 5p special, still gets you a yield of 6%. You think, so if you're an income hunter, you might think, I'll take my lumps. But if you're a capital gains seeker, and frankly, when we talked about it a year ago, we didn't expect this stock to go bananas. And you kind of think with the benefit of hindsight, once it had gone up by nearly a half, you should have thought, okay, this is just a bit too good to be true. But because it's not really, let's face it, a massively growing market. And I guess you've got two questions there. Is the current hiatus in card buying, is that a cyclical thing? Because let's face it, we know that wage inflation is not great. We know that food inflation is very strong. We know that times are tough for a lot of people out there. It's a very straightforward decision. Shall I save £2.53 on a card and a stamp?
Yeah.
Answer, yeah. Quite possibly, actually. And or is it more fundamental than that? Is it Skype, WhatsApp, Snapchat and everything else? Is that just doing the card business in on a much more fundamental basis? And time will only tell with both of those. But I think if you're a capital gains seeker, then this isn't, I didn't think, to be fair, it was a stock for you a year ago and was pleasantly surprised and probably lulled into a false sense of security. It certainly isn't now. If you're an income hunter, frankly, this is a mature business, well-run, not much debt. You may want to hunker down with it. But in the knowledge, the shares are probably not going anywhere in a very great hurry.
Yeah, October 2014 was the last time it hit this sort of price level.
Yes.
And I think someone needs to send them a get well soon card, you know, because...
Yes.
It's not like I don't think it's cyclical. Do you? I mean, my wife is
my nagging fear is no. I mean, nagging fear is no. Frankly,
it's like the papers industry. Really, I think the newspapers industry. You know, it is generally. I mean, I'll give you a difference. Me compared to my parents, for example, I don't buy a newspaper. We look online, look at everything online, and my parents always have a newspaper. They had lots of cards around their house for Christmas, and my wife, who's even younger than me, says she doesn't particularly like cards. Waste of time, she thinks they are. It's a generational thing, I think, isn't it?
You know? I think it is, and it's an easy decision to make. Why am I going to buy £2.53 for something that's going to be in the bin in a week's or the shredder in a week's time? I think a lot of people are going to go down that path, I think.
Cool. All right, what's next, Russ?
So, Craneware is the second one. CRW, AIM quoted. You love the chart for this one, Justin. When I'm chatting, you pull it up. Okay. It looks like a set of steps leading up to a building. It's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
So, Edinburgh-based provider Edinburgh provider of healthcare software, financial analysis tools for hospitals, and it helps them forecast growth, prices, changes in prices, coding, retaining profits, and it's basically for the US private healthcare system. It does virtually nothing in the UK. It's all for the US, because in the end, the US private hospitals, they're private, they've got to find a way of funding themselves. So there's a major impact. Now, we know the NHS is under financial pressure and it needs to be financially efficient, but the US private hospitals, they've really have got to fund themselves. We know they've got the Trump healthcare reforms to deal with, and so Craneware is very much in the vanguard of that. It's a company that itself, when we first flagged it last May at 12 quid, strong growth, good cash flow, high margins, and it's delivered, and the shares have gone from 12 quid to nearly £17.50, but as you can see from that chart, in a very, very bizarre way, goes up on a trading statement, normally on a set of results, then does nothing, and then da da da. It's not the most liquid stock. Management have got about a 13% stake in the company.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few big institutional shareholders out there, but nevertheless, the good news is, unlike Card Factory, this one is buzzing along and doing everything that you would have hoped. First half trading statement showed strong growth, good renewals, roughly 85% of businesses are recurring revenues. They're looking at sales and profits up around 15 to 18% for the year, meeting expectations. The actual full year results of interims will be actually out in March. And also a big new US contract for 75 new hospitals for its value cycle software. So this is a stock that is delivering. The one problem is multiple, the valuation. It's on a PE in the mid-30s. That isn't going to suit value hunters. It's a momentum jockey's play. And if there is a wobble or a short-term disappointment, then we know how those steps on that chart are going to start looking. There's going to be a big one straight down. But for the moments at least, it looks to be doing everything that you would hope. I would guess now on past trading history, it'll do zilch for 2 or 3 months until it digests the results in March. But at the moment, this one's going the right way. You just need to mind your eye on the multiple.
Yeah, and do you know what? It's almost, it always comes back like steps. Like you said, it goes up a couple of steps quite steeply, but comes back and reverts that 200-day moving average pretty much. And that at the moment is around about 1345. So you'd think it'll probably come down here a little bit. It's powering away, but now is probably not the...
It's one of those you probably want to buy on weakness right now,
exactly.
I think, rather than buying it straight away.
Yeah, you need a bit of micro-timing here. You time your buy better, it should be fine. But this is why I like. I do like software, because unlike the company we just talked about, you know, cards, the margins are thin there, software can be replicated for very little cost, you know? And,
correct.
Sold
scalability
everywhere.
Is
exactly.
Key. Yeah, exactly. It's a much better business.
Right, so what's next, Russ?
The last one is Burford Capital.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the litigation financing specialist. So, you know, they will actually put money in, they will help fund your case, and then they will take a percentage of any financial rewards that come out of that if they are successful. Stock's gone like a rocket. We first looked at it at about £7.50. It's now nearly 12 quid. And they've just produced some really good news. At $1.3 billion of financial commitments last year, that's trebled what they put up in 2016. That's been partly funded by some bond issues that they've done. And intriguingly, in the same trading statement of this week, they actually announced that they were looking at a fourth bond issue. They've got three out there right now, which mature in 2022, 2024, and 2026. They've actually got, by the way, for anybody who's a fixed income fiend, relatively attractive yields. They're about 300 basis points over gilt. So they're actually, you know, in terms of risk reward, not bad at all. But I think what's really caught my eye with, just from the equity perspective, is some of the news flow that came out before Christmas. You may remember that they made an acquisition last year of an asset manager to help them run some of the money that they're pulling in more efficiently, a company called Gershon Keller Capital. Well, most of the senior executives they've acquired have now left, which is obviously a risk in the people business, because the assets have got legs and the legs can take them in a different direction. So that's one thing to bear in mind. And the other is just that the house broker, Liberum, downgraded the stock to a hold. Now, that's not something that you see desperately often.
Yeah.
And Liberum, whose research is generally pretty smart, just flagged these staff departures. They flagged that there were some questions over the timing of some of the performance fees for 2018. And consensus has actually got earnings just sort of pausing to maybe even going down a bit this year. And also the stock's on a pretty lofty valuation after a brilliant run. So to me, it doesn't feel like the wheels are falling off. But the risk reward has gone, you know, again, probably a little bit more towards risk. And after a stunning run, I couldn't blame anybody if they just thought, actually, let's just take a profit for a bit. Let's see what the house broker's going to say when we get the full year numbers out. And maybe if you wanted to keep exposure to the stock, have a look at the bonds or this new bond issue and see how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous stuff, Russ, and thanks for coming on. So, you know,
not at all, Justin.
I know you're struggling against it, but you've put in a fine performance today, Russ, and apart from a bit of a nasally sound, you were ill. Desperately
nip
ill.
Nip off my 53rd lem sip of the morning.
Yeah, marvellous. Cheers, Russ.
Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is founder of financialorbit.com. It's Chris Bailey. You're right, Chris.
Hello, Justin. Yeah, very well. Thank you. Very well. Nearly the weekend.
Yes, it is. We're on the edge of it here. And we just had some breaking news, isn't it?
Right. I mean, it's, you know, so much for a sort of a mid-January boring Friday. FTSE, you know, you don't often get bids for kind of big FTSE 100 names or related. GKN, which is one of the few, I guess, industrial names still left in Britain's premier index. It kind of has interest from aerospace right the way through to automotive and sort of various bits in between. Been going for sort of 150 odd years. It's actually received a bid today from another British company called Melrose, which is sort of one of those companies which very clever companies. They sort of look to improve businesses and sell them on at a profit. They've been very successful at doing that. So this is a pretty big thing. GKN, listeners may remember, have had various shockers over the last year, warnings, write-downs, CEOs that were going to ascend to that senior management position, being at the last death, kicked out because of various indiscretions and everything else. Bottom line is today they've received this bid, they've rejected it, and they've actually said something very interesting. They've said they're going to look to split the aerospace and the automotive businesses in due course. And my guess is that was what Melrose were going to try and do if they ever got held of the company. Melrose bid about 400 pence a share. That's about 20-odd% above where GKN were trading yesterday. The shares have gone to a premium to that, I think, because this is just the start of the game. There's further discussions and everything else to be had here, no doubt. But GKN have turned down Melrose. But interestingly, as I say, they've come up with their own plan, which is probably looking a little bit like what Melrose were going to do.
Okay, yeah, well, do you know what? Oddly, I just mentioned it before we came on, I did have a price alert on GKN, and a couple of days ago it hit the top end of that price alert. So they obviously started rising. I mean, did someone know about this? What's going on there?
I mean, the thing is, it has been the talk of the town for a while that GKN had got themselves into a bit of a hole. And they needed a new CEO. They've actually today also said that their interim CEO is going to become their permanent CEO. Quite a good appointment, in my opinion. But there's been a lot of chat over the last 6 months that actually it wasn't sustainable. Automotive and aerospace, these are things which no longer need to be together. And it's obviously been quite trendy across the world. You've had all these sort of activist hedge funds looking at sort of splitting up companies and creating value. My guess is that's what Melrose were probably going to do. And maybe GKN have kind of said, well, boys, you know, actually, we kind of agree. So we'll see. So, you know, and you think about it for other companies too. I mean, the one that comes to mind is Whitbread with Costa and Premier Inn. That's a very similar situation. They've obviously got an activist on their shareholder base now. Not that they've said anything publicly, and certainly the company is still committed to the combined structure. But it's a bit like Whitbread. Was I totally surprised that, you know, GKN have come out and said they're going to split the business? No, because I've seen enough press coverage on that concept over the last 6 months, you know, to wallpaper, you know, a decent sized room. Mm-hmm. But the reality is you never know in the market. And, you know, I can point to other stocks which have been perennial bid targets for years and years. Smith & Nephew is a great example in, you know, hips and other associated kind of medical technologies, but it's never been bid for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just one of those things, and I guess sometimes you're lucky and sometimes you're not, if you're in it or not.
Yeah, okay. What are the news that, Chris?
So otherwise, obviously, it's been a big retail week. Lots of Christmas trading stats, and I saw actually the BBC's take on it all yesterday in one of their major bulletins. Quite amusing, actually, to see how they sort of perceive the winners and losers. They looked just at the sales line. And I suggest that's a little bit dangerous because it's also about profits and share price reaction too. So to today's crop, Mitchells and Butler is an interesting one. Obviously, a pub group, you know, I'm sure many listeners are regulars at one of their establishments. Kind of interesting Christmas trading statement because, of course, they had a little bit of a whoopsie a few months ago where they said, guys, we're not going to grow as fast as we thought. And they also fiddled around a bit with the dividend. And obviously that hacked off some investors. They sold the shares down. But if you look at the statement today, they said that the core three-week festive trading period was strong, like-for-like growth 3.9%, record Christmas Day takings. Who goes to a pub on Christmas Day? You know, whoever knew. Apparently 225,000 meals they hawked on Christmas Day. So there you go. Somebody's
I've often seen them advertised, and I know, you know, it's been temptation on the side of normally the person who makes the Christmas meal feels a lot of stress, and it'll be nice to just let someone else do it, you know. And so yeah.
But it's not cheap. It's about, I mean, local near where I live, I think was like £50 or £60. You know, you got a four course or whatever, and no doubt you can drink your weight in alcohol or whatever. But you know, it's not exactly cheap. But there you go. They sold 225,000 meals on Christmas Day, which is pretty good going. But they also then said there was some wet weather that impacted the run-up to the festive period. So, you know, there were puts and takes. There were good points, there were bad points. And it was, I thought it was really instructive how the shares have traded. in the first couple of hours of trading. They started down. I think people saw the kind of the, oh my God, it was difficult. There was some bad weather and that had an impact. But then I think they looked through it a bit more carefully and said, look, actually, it wasn't that bad. They even used the word encouraging in there. And I would say, given the low expectations about the pub sector, which obviously has been hit by some bad weather in the summer and other stuff, fears about wage increases for some of their staff and all of that thing, I think actually it's all right. It's workable. And I wasn't surprised to see the shares when I last looked just sort of popping a bit north. And my feeling is, if you look across the pub sector, Mitchell's, Green King, which had a little bit of a sell-off after a brokerage downgrade in the last couple of days, I see a bit of value there. So, you know, it's not just about selling Christmas meals. I think actually going forward, they could well have a pretty reasonable first bit of the year. They've got the World Cup to look forward to. That tends to be quite good. And as I say, they've got some easy comps in the summer. So put it all together, I think not a bad one to be looking at, thinking about for the next 6 or 7 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's MAB. All right, and anything else happening?
Well, a final one, probably, just keep it on the old retail front. Mm-hmm. We've had, remember Terry Leahy of Tesco's fame?
Yeah, oh yeah.
The guy who built it up into the beast that it became, yeah. And then kind of had slightly blotted the copybook in his last year or two, and obviously exited the business under a little bit of a trading, kind of shabby trading cloud, which obviously led ultimately to profit warnings and other problems. Well, Terry, he rocked up as chairman at something called a very weird name, B&M European Value Retail, which is sort of I've missed what the ticker is. I'll have to try and look that up as I'm speaking. The thing about it is, you see them on the high streets, B&M. You see them on various market estates and whatever else. And it's sort of the classic. It's a slightly broader range than a Poundland. Certainly a broader price range than a Poundland would be. But it's of that ilk. It's sort of, as the value retailing aspect talks about, it appeals to people looking for a bargain and an interesting selection of sort of household and related products. They've actually done a pretty reasonable job, actually. Mm-hmm. And if you look at today's little update, and again, it's just a sales update. It's the classic sort of Christmas trading thing. 3.9% like-for-like UK revenue rise, happy with expectations, and continued strong sales and operational performance. You can't argue with that. You know, they are adding stores. The sales line was up 22% year on year. Most of that is opening new stores. As I say, 3.9% was the real like for like. But I have to say, you know, thinking about the retail scene, there's winners and losers. We know it's a patchy environment, but the thing is, good companies with products people want are still doing okay. You know, I looked at the supermarkets this week in particular, and I thought to myself, you know, there are more positives to take from what companies like Morrison's and Tesco's were saying, I thought, the negatives. So it's not a complete disaster. And of course, when the whole world, it seems, or investing world dislikes retail, you know, that tells you there's a few opportunities. Not everything has to be like, you know, Debenhams or Mothercare, you know, sort of substandard tier two, tier three businesses. Some of the tier one players in their little areas, ones with good market share and interesting product and sensible balance sheets, you know, it can be an opportunity. So I've got no strong view on B&M European Value Retail, but I kind of prefer to buy a few Green King or MAB at this moment in time. But I have to say, for investors generally, where there's fear, there can be opportunity too.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's BME. So that's a ticker.
BME. There. Sorry. Yeah. I was attempting to do three things at once. But as you can see by the share price chart, no disaster at all. And Terry's done a pretty good job there. So he's unblotted his copybook after the little Tesco finale debacle of a few years back. You know, very nice looking chart. What was it? 300p a year ago. So there you go.
Yeah. No disaster. Well, do you know what? In fact, in November last year, it was down at 230, and now it's up at £4.07. So there we are, nice little bit of gain there.
Excellent. There you go. Well, there you go. I say there's always a bit of value there somewhere. So it's just a question of searching for it and keeping.
I said November 2016. That was.
Yeah, I was going to say you're allowed to make that mistake in earliest January, Justin. You're allowed to make that mistake. If you were still saying that in kind of February or March or something, then
it hasn't really doubled in less than a month. Because even for a big company, that would be a bit of a challenge. Then
absolutely.
Marvellous, thanks for that, Chris, and we'll speak next week, fella.
That's good. See you soon.
Okay, it's time for Lessons Learned by Investors and Traders. And by all means, submit your lesson if you've learned one, a rule you're trying to stick by. All right, this is from Gavin Allen. It's a good one. It is very difficult to truly learn until you have lost money. My advice, therefore, is to start small and learn from every loss, but also every gain. Thanks, Gavin. Profound. I like that. All right, top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours are, at five, Verditech. I had George on the podcast yesterday. It's VDTK. At four, Monreal. That's more, M-O-R-E. At three, The People's Operator, TPOP. At two, Fast Forward Innovations, FFWD. And number one, it's AIQ Limited, which went up crazily, like several 100% on launch, and now it's been suspended. But it's linked to blockchain and all that stuff. So a lot of hype, but it's been suspended now. Didn't last very long. Don't know what happened there. I assume they'll be back. All right, top five most liked RSs are as follows. At five, Motif Bio. That's Holdings and Company. At four, Prospect Oil and Gas. Commencement of flow testing at Padir Mir Well. At three, United Oil and Gas. Padir Mir flow testing commences. At two, Metal Tiger. Director share purchase. And number one most liked RNS is from Sirius Minerals. Are you serious? Yes. And it's quarterly progress update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.